In the Hebrew community, there is an expression representing the toast of life. A salute to the incredible miracle of being among the living. That expression is l'chaim. And that means to life. Now, most of you probably heard that before and remember it from that show-stopping song from Fiddler on the Roof. It's a word which recognizes life and rejoices it. It affirms life and does so in a way as to include all the important messages of celebration and appreciation. Now, such a phrase suits us well as we turn this morning to look at Jesus' words from the lesson in John's Gospel. I came that they might have life and have it abundantly. L'chaim. In our culture today, what is it we seek that will bring that kind of abundant life? We have images of the abundant life all around us. There's those television ads for the nice car, a nice place to live. Maybe the image of an abundant Thanksgiving table comes to your mind. Now, I'm not mentioning these things to put them down in any way. In fact, it would be a mistake to try and divorce the spiritual from the material and tell you the abundant life is somehow only found in spiritual matters. Now, this is an old habit that the Christian church has embraced too much in history. To try and make the abundant life only a spiritual affair may be fine and dandy for those of us who are middle-class Americans. But for the majority of the world who face poverty and hunger on a daily basis, an abundant life that is only spiritual is sheer heresy. To talk about the abundant life cannot be done by separating the material and the social from the spiritual. Really, what is l'chaim? What does it mean to have abundant life? The parable from John reminds us that Jesus is the door through which abundant life can be experienced. The abundant life begins with the example set by Jesus, the Good Shepherd, and reaches out to include those material and social blessings that God has given us. But it begins with a Christ-centered life. Now, many people feel that religion contradicts a life that is enjoyable and plentiful. These individuals view God as a harsh God, a punishing God. They believe that somehow God is against people, or at least against the simple enjoyments, pleasures of life. Believe it or not, during my time in the ministry, I have heard parents tell their children, remember, Jesus is watching everything you do. Or one mom I heard tell her son, God will punish you even if I don't. Not to mention bad parenting that really contributes to a bad theology. Such an image of a punishing, harsh God makes religion seem like a rule-ridden, fearful way of living. This image makes salvation seem like it can only be achieved by focusing on the rules. Don't do this or don't say that. Life is serious. We're terrible sinners, we are. Then the focus becomes centered on our unworthiness because we view God as the judge. How can life be enjoyed and experienced in abundance when all we can concentrate on is our failings and our mistakes? This is certainly an issue and a struggle for the great reformer Martin Luther. Luther was so self-obsessed with his failings that one day his confessor, the one he was closest to, exclaimed, Martin, God is not angry with you. You're angry with God. Luther's view of an angry and wrathful God developed, I think, in part because of his own upbringing by his own father. He created a religion and a theology that was full of fear and inhibited. It was an anxious kind of life. For us, such a view of God creates a religion without grace. It translates into Christianity without Christ and Christ's shepherding care. There is a story of an old Dutch preacher, and I don't remember where I heard it, but he served two congregations in Holland. And it seemed that the only way this preacher could get to both of his churches on a Sunday morning was to skate across the frozen body of water separating the two churches. That wasn't a bother to him because he truly enjoyed to skate. When he asked permission of the elders to skate that distance on Sunday mornings, they reluctantly agreed. But only on the stipulation that he would not enjoy doing so. Now that story points to a kind of distorted religion and way of life that's been drained of all grace and all mercy. It makes religion seem like some sort of hardened list of rigid attitudes that prevent people from enjoying an abundant and satisfying life. If we can move away from that myth, that image that God is harsh and angry, judging, toward the biblical image of God as a good and caring shepherd, we can begin to experience a forgiving and loving God who wants all people to enjoy life to its fullest. Such a positive image of God invites us to explore and adventure and search and risk in discovering the abundant life. In Jesus' time, to contrast him, there were the Pharisees who were stealing and killing and destroying life by their legalistic and inhibited rules for living. Jesus invited his followers to take risks in life, knowing that the Good Shepherd was a God who looked after his people with kindness, and mercy, and love. Some people, though, believe that the abundant life is somehow a risk-free life. That the Good Shepherd will protect his followers from the pitfalls and the tragedies that befall us. That, of course, is a myth. But I find it interesting today how many people are attempting to create some sort of risk-free environment. We don't want any pain or any harm to come to our loved ones, and many times we will try to do anything possible to prevent it. There are those who will avoid conflict in relationships and marriages, believing that this will prevent and minimize the hurts and barriers. Such an attitude focuses life on things that we should avoid, rather than the things we ought to enjoy, the things we ought to explore. For example, I know of people who avoid marriage because it might not work out someday. Or a couple that decides not to have children because their children might not grow up in the proper manner. Or the person that might take a trip or not take a trip, believing that it's not safe. I know of people who are afraid to pray in public for fear of what others might think. Life then becomes centered on protecting ourselves from the possible failure or hurt. But you know as well as I do that all of our important decisions in life involve some risk. Each of us has to measure those risks against the anticipated return. Christians have many risks to face. The psalmist writes, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, fear no evil." Each of us will walk through that valley at some point. Each of us will face disasters and pains and conflicts and griefs in our lives and in the lives of our loved ones. But the Good Shepherd is the one who will be with us as we take these risks and encounter these trials in life. Jesus invites us to participate in the life. A life that includes bumps and bruises and falls. And he's there as the shepherd who will pick us up. We're invited to a life that may be lost from time to time, but we have a shepherd that will look for us. Living the abundant life in Christ opens us up to freedom and to joy. As Christians, we are called to live life abundantly. In all of our relationship with God and our relationship with each other, we have to invest in our time and our efforts into those relationships. We can't sit by the sidelines, somehow confused by fear. One theologian was lecturing on miracles. And he was asked to give a specific answer. He answered, "There is really only one miracle, and that is life. Life is a miracle that easily gets wasted by self-protective activities. But it is through Christ that we're invited to enjoy life and enjoy it to its fullest. Blessed are those whose lives embody that phrase, L'chaim. For them, life is abundant. For them, life is rich. And you know, it can be that way for us too."